The program originally scheduled for this time is having difficulties. One moment, please. Insecurity that sweeps over countless multitudes as they look. Hey, you know, speaking of the insecurity of the countless multitudes, Bob, I am walking along Times Square today, and I see in this dime store, they got this radio. And it's a radio there, and there's a crowd of people looking in the window. A whole bunch of people are all standing around there, and they got that gawky, rubbery look in the eye, you know, of really looking at something, really fascinated by it. So this crowd is looking in the window on Times Square, and I stop, and there's a radio in the window. And it says, new, plug-in radio. And I says, plug-in radio, that's a new idea. And underneath it is a card that explains it. It says, new plug-in radio that operates without batteries. Just plug it in the house current. It's amazing. It says, plug in house current like a toaster. Use it like any other ordinary appliance. Does away with old-fashioned transistor batteries. And the crowd was absolutely bemused. You see, there's this whole crowd of transistor types standing around there amazed at the idea that you can get a radio that you can plug in the house juice there. Just plug it in like a toaster. You don't need batteries. Well, I go on for about 5 minutes or so. And I'm wandering past another doorway, and I look in there, and it's one of these doorways, you know, where they got the records playing, always real loud records going on there, and they're having these price wars continually, these price wars on Levantine art, and they've cut the prices down to rock bottom on these Indian cutlasses that you can buy in there, and the Japanese spy cameras. Now I know how the economy of Times Square is going. Just by the price of Japanese spy cameras. You know those little cameras? Did you ever see any of those? Did you know anybody who ever took pictures with one of those things? I'm just asking another rhetorical question. You know, you get in a lot of trouble with rhetorical questions, but because immediately some clown will call up from Staten Island and say he did. Well, I never knew a guy who took pictures with those things because I don't think those things are for taking pictures. They're for buying. And it says a Japanese spy camera, special low price, 89 cents. Now, that's way over on the east side in the high rent district. Now, they're 49 cents on Times Square. And if you go down a little lower on 7th Avenue, they're 39 cents. You can judge the quality of the neighborhood as to how it's going. Well, all of which reminds me of It's Monday, you know? We might as well concede it. It's Monday. Hey, who was that guy who came on before my program? Did you hear that guy that came in there to said something there? Sounded very important. What was that? Did it sound like I was preempted? Well, don't push your luck, Dad. I hope you're not working for the management here. Suggesting to them how much better it would be if they had this guy that comes on and talks about blackstrap molasses and vitamins. You know that guy. What's his name? Oh, I can't remember. It's all the business about the clean colon, you know? That whole thing of the fluoridation. You know, that thing. It's a new kind. It's kind of godliness, you know? So you get close to things. But, you know, the other day, speaking of godliness, I'm sitting at a table, unbeknownst. I'm sitting at a table there. And sitting at the same table is Gene Tunney. Oh, yes. And Gene Tunney is a very official-looking man. And, yes, he's a really interesting guy. And so I'm sitting at the table, and all these people, and it's Gene Tunney. And I'm like, Gene Tunney. For the benefit of the unwashed, Gene Tunney is an ex-heavyweight champion. Oh, yes, and a very good one. And Tunney's sitting there. And somebody says, well, Tunney, you should say a few words. So Tunney gets up and he says a few words, and amid all the things he's saying, he says, you know, it's a funny thing about how everybody thinks most fighters are illiterate people. He says, as a matter of fact, most of them are. However, many fighters he has known have had unbelievable senses of humor. For example, he says, James J. Johnson. No, it was James Corbett. John Corbett? John? James Corbett. Corbett. That's the guy, Corbett. Corbett. Yeah, that's a different guy. He says all those fighters were named James J. something. I don't recall. That seems to be a kind of a thing with fighters. But he says Corbett got up one day. He says he was absolutely, this is an authentic story. Corbett was standing at a bar. No, by George, it was a man named Sullivan. It was Sullivan. It was James J. Sullivan. That's right, it was Sullivan. Now it's coming back to me. John L. Sullivan. The historical section. The Boston Strong Boy. That's right. It was Sullivan. It was John L. Sullivan. And listen what John L. Sullivan said. Now, forever and ever, you will remember the name of John L. Sullivan like I have. Once you hear what Sullivan said, Tony said, Sullivan is standing at the bar. Now, I can tell you, this is true, as you probably have known, that whenever a guy is a fighter, clowns like to push them around or try to push them around. There is something about a fighter when he walks into a place, 17 guys with pimples jump up and say, "Ah, yeah, so smart. All right, try this one." And they swing at him. Yes, this is a problem with fighters. It always happens. Always happens. Well, Sullivan is standing up at the bar. And Sullivan was very good standing at bar, as I understand. And Sullivan is standing up there, and he's talking politics, and he's bellowing, and he's looking back at the bar where they had this great big picture of this large lady who was scantily clad, and she was draped with flowers. He's back there, and he's watching. He's drinking it, lapping it up, and hollering and yelling. And a small guy comes up and starts doing the bit. You know, he's going to fight Sullivan. Well, finally, Sullivan turns around, and he looks at him, and this is the famous Mo. He turns, and he looks at the guy, and he says, "Now, look. If you're going to hit me, you better not let me hear about it." There was a long pause. And the man looks at him and says, "What?" He says, "You heard me. I said, if you hit me, you had better not let me know about it." Another long pause. And all you look at me with a dumb face, as though you don't get what the meaning of the Mo is. You don't? All right, I'll explain it to you. What he meant was, see, it's like my Aunt Teresa. She used to look at me when I had that dumb look on my face, which I had all the way, because, you see, I had adenoids. Funny thing, I had adenoids the size of, moderately sized, cauliflowers. All right, cut it out! I don't want anybody laughing at my adenoids. Anyway, I had these adenoids, see, and I'd come walking into the house carrying these two adenoids in front of me, great big ones. Kids don't have adenoids anymore. What do they do with adenoids? I never hear of anybody getting. No. I don't know anybody who's had an operation for adenoids. Well, I do. They still have adenoids? I thought they were lost in evolution. I thought I was one of the last of the adenoid owners. Well, I had a pair of adenoids that were, oh, as I say, a small grapefruit. And I would carry him in there. I had a thing. I'd carry him in, and I'd come in every day, and I had this funny look. So the look of the adenoids, it pulls your eyes down when you have good big adenoids. Yeah, your mouth is open, of course. My mouth, did I get them out? Later, yes. I had them in a jar. But these, well, now quit. You just said, blah, blah. So these adenoids were pulling my eyeballs down, and once in a while, my Aunt Teresa, who was my rotten aunt, would scream over the tablecloth, if you don't cut that out, your face is going to freeze like that. Well, you know, I didn't realize how prophetic she was. My face has frozen that way. It's it has stood in my way for years. How many of you out there have a face that was frozen that way? And you can't do nothing about it. Yeah, I can see Helena Rubinstein looking out of that old movie, looking at all them chicks. I want you to try my fashion steak. And then the girl comes out with those hard eyes. She says, yes, girls, if you have a face that was frozen that way, painted over with the new Helena Rubinstein frozen face paint. If you... Funny. Yeah. Funny. Yeah. All right. It's Monday night. Have a face that's frozen like that. You know, while we're on the subject of frozen faces, I might as well... I'm very sorry about a program we did last week. It seems that a lot of you are very disturbed now about the program we did, Re-Love, last week. You know, the one that... you remember the one about the Jack Lemmon syndrome? I'm awfully sorry. A lot of ladies took the trouble to write me and say, Mr. Shepherd, you are love. Forget it! Love, get it out of your skull, rotten people. What do you mean, love? I know. Give me 30 seconds away, bums. You forget all about me. I know. I don't exist. Nothing. I come out on the loudspeaker. I'm free. Don't cost you a rotten, stinking dime. Free, yeah. Off fields of waving green, yeah. America the beautiful. I know you, America the beautiful. All the birds are singing to it. Cincinnati Reds won the first ball game. What do you think you're going to do, Mets, about it? Nothing. Sit around in your big fat you-know-what. You love me. Well, I don't love you. None of you. You're rotten. All of you. Sit out there, freebies, getting me for nothing every night. If you had a big dough, you'd write to Jack Gould and you'd make him write good reviews about me. You don't. Sitting out there. Listen, if you had to come down to the Blue Angel to hear me, you sat there with those drinks, those $20 drinks, you'd applaud your crummy hands off. I know you would. You'd love me. You'd think I was as funny as Awesome Bean. I know, huh? I'm on the radio, so I'm nothing. I don't love, love, wow, love, schmove. Come on, all together now. The stars and stripes forever. Speaking of America the Beautiful, this is WOR. WOR in friendly old New York, which is a fantastic town to live in, but a rotten place to visit. Don't come. And we're on FM and AM and the whole schmoo there. Let's see. I'm sorry. I know. A guy wrote to me from Philadelphia, very angry type. You know, you can always tell. Dear Shepherd, why don't you stick to your last? Why don't you stick to blasting the bourgeoisie? As Mencken put it, the bourgeoisie which spawned the rotten likes of you. And cut out that jazz with Ragtime Cowboy Joe. Cut it out. I don't want you to play Ragtime Cowboy Joe. Stick to blasting the bourgeoisie. Lay it out.
You can get
gonna be.
You can get heartache where there ain't any pain. You can get sunshine always after the rain. You can always find heaven without going up low.
Listen to this now.
Get loving where there ain't any love.
That's laying it out. And you can't stick to your last bourgeoisie. Not long for this world. Listen, you're going to be sorry when I'm gone, all of you. You really are. All of you. All together. Well, I'm not fooling. You know, speaking of that, as long as we're on the subject of fooling around, it's a funny business. Oh, let's get the commercial out of the way, huh? Now, a word from American Heritage Magazine. Our stars and stripes forever. Come on, let's go. That's a nothing better. Yes, the stars and stripes forever. Certainly, no one who is interested in those fields of waving grain can fail to be interested in the American Heritage Magazine. If you want to read a fascinating half hour, read the eyewitness report of a trial that ended more than 17 years. What's this, American Heritage? If you want to read American Heritage, which is a very good magazine, I would suggest you send $1, $1, with the picture of the founding father of our country on it. George Washington. George Washington, the founder of our country, sent one portrait of him to American Heritage in care of me, Victor Jury, WOR, AM and FM, New York. And they will send you one copy of this magazine, representative type. It is hardcover, and it's worth having. $1. All right, enough American Heritage for tonight. George, it's very, very slippery. Get you in the knees. While we're on this, might as well lay it right out. You know, it's funny business. The other night, if you don't mind, do any of you mind? I don't know whether, should I tell a story tonight? I'm taking my coat off now. I'm getting ready to get out of business. Now, it's Monday night. And I feel good tonight. I also feel very dangerous tonight. I feel tonight like this is one of those nights when the truth could very well come out. Of course, you know what would happen. Oh, yes, there's no question about it. If the truth would come out, it would all be over for all of us. You know that. It would be through. You'd have to go back to that, what is it, that guy that's always arguing with those guys who've just written a book on what's wrong with boxing in America. Barry! I'll tell you, in my new book on the boxing situation in this city of New York, Barry, I lay it right out as to what is going on in the boxing commission. Now, Barry, the other... Oh, that's another program. And you'll have to go back to all that. Now, before we push you into that, I would like to ask a rhetorical question. Should I tell you tonight the story of the great Toledo Khan, in which I was an unwitting accomplice? Or shall I tell you the story? The first time Shepard ran pell-mell, headfirst, unwittingly, shoulders erect, eyes glazed, into the other world. What other world? Well, that's the point of the story. There is another world. Now, the other world, I might as well tell you what it is. The other world, you see, is the other world. Now, most of us are slobs. And, yes, we are. We're, you know, we just go flumping along. Guys buying cars, watching the ball games, burping, scratching, hollering around. You know, figuring that, you know, if you ever meet the right chick, it'll work. You know what I mean? Just life. You know, you watch dogs walking past hydrants, and you sit around, and you watch chicks walking around on 58th Street. You know, just thing, you know, you're just living along. Well, we're the slobs. We stand in line, go to see big movies, big important stuff, and we listen to people being interviewed on big important programs, and we read the Harper's, you know, and Reporter, and The Nation, and The Voice, and we're very aware and alert, And yet we're just flumping along, scratching, burping, hollering. And, you know what I'm talking about. This is life. Life, in other words. Well, there is us. That's now, the point of the story is, there is the other world. Now, no, it's, don't worry about it. Don't just start milling around. Just anything that's up. There is the other world. And we don't know what to make of it when we run into this. Now, shall I tell you about the first time, or shall I tell you about the Great Toledo Con? You want to hear about the Great Toledo Con? Well, in a way, they're both tied up. You see, most of us live a life, we really do, in fact, all of us live a life, where we figure we pretty much have the territory pegged out. You know, we got things pretty well understood. You know, every slob figures he's got the terrain, he's got the terrain cased. You know, he knows what life is about. He knows the answers. You really do, you know. You listen to, there isn't the veriest slob on the street, believe me. If you were to ask him about, and John Scott is always doing this, he'll lower a microphone out of the window and he'll ask this cretin, he'll say, "What about the Cuban situation?" And the guy will say, "Well, I'll tell you, the Cuban situation, if Kennedy had only done about it to Afghanistan, that's what I think." Well, then he goes wandering on down the street, his cretinous, walnut-shaped mind still reaching out, groping through the darkness. And I'm not putting him down. We are all in the same boat in one way or another is what I'm trying to say. We just got various blind spots, each one of us. Well, now, the thing that throws us is when we run into something in the terrain which we figure we've got pegged. We figure we've got it pretty well laid out. When we run into something that completely reverses all known rules of order, what we have figured out, and blasts a hole in the wall and disappears and becomes world famous. Well, now this is the kind of thing that, especially when you come from the bourgeoisie, this really is not, it's not really handled easily. It's like everybody in the neighborhood, for example, they go through several stages. They go through the playing second base stage, then they go through the candy store stage, then they go through the bowling alley stage, then they go through the buying the used mercury stage, then they go through the get married stage, then they go through the depressed stage, then they go through the having the kid stage, then they go through the buying the insurance stage, and then finally they get through the dying stage. Well, one guy in the crowd, all of a sudden, for no known reason in the neighborhood, writes a 17-volume history of the philosophy of the Eastern Republics and becomes a world-famous philologer, historian, and sociologist. Well, now, how do you handle this? Everybody says, "What are you? I saw him with a candy store. He's nothing. It's a candy store. I know about that slob. He used to go bowling with him." Well, in some way, they're trying to make him like him. He's trying to pull him down. Well, one time, I'm this kid. I'm going to tell you how I really ran into the Framistan world and began to have a vague understanding that there were other and completely at variant sets of mores that I had never encountered in my somewhat circumscribed world. Most of us live worlds that are really tightly controlled. Really, we don't recognize it, but we do. So I'm this kid. Now, you got it? I am roughly, I don't know. I just have gotten out of the Army. And you don't learn anything in the Army except hollering. And I had just gotten out of the Army. And you know this, Bob, a lot of hollering and yelling. But you don't really learn what the world is about. You learn what the Army's about, but that's not quite the same. And I had gotten out of the Army. I'm now going to school. And you don't learn what the world's about in school either. You just learn what school's about and what learning's about. But you don't learn about the world at all, see? I am learning about the world in between the times when I'm at school. And it is this summer, and I have this job in this little honky-tonk, rinky-tink radio station, which is out in the Middle West in a town which we shall call, for want of a better name and to hide the true facts and to protect the guilty, we'll call this town Toledo. There is no such town. As you know, Toledo is in Spain. And it's obvious that there could be no town like that in America. But this town we'll call Toledo. I could have just as easily have called it Aachen. I could have called it Munich. But we will take another famous European town and call it Toledo. So I'm in this town called Toledo, out in the Midwest, and I am Dewey. It's fantastic. It's impossible to believe, but do you know that there were times when if I stood still for more than 5 minutes, my tennis shoes would get wet, and there would be a puddle around me of dew that had dripped off of me. That's how dew-covered I was. I was covered with dew, like a veritable morning glory at dawn. Really, it says, yes, no, absolutely open, free, and I was, I say the closest thing that I can think of to me was Billy Budd. Absolutely pure, no, pure good. I'm serious. I was a very good person. And I think all of us are very good people in one way or another, but I was a very good person. No, really, I'm serious. I was a very good person. I had blue eyes, and I'm working in this radio station, and I thought everything was what everyone had said everything was. I really thought that a penny saved is a penny earned, or a penny earned is a penny saved. Which way does it go? I thought that if a guy hung a sign in his office that said think, he thunk. I really did. And you know where the sign says all employees must wash their hands before leaving this room? I washed my hands. And I figured that everybody else did, you know? And it really is true. Sometimes I go to a restaurant, I feel great by leaving without washing my hands because then I assert the fact that I'm a customer. Well, so that's the kind of person I am. I'm living along the book. And so one day, the guy calls me in, the salesman. He says, Shepherd, this guy I'd like you to meet. This guy's got a business out here. We call him a freelance packager. Why, a freelance packager? All I was doing, you know, I was doing this little radio show where I came on and said whoopies and hit gongs and blew whistles and did a tap dance and did all little things like that, you know. And I said, they're a freelance package. Yes, Mr. Shepherd, this man here has a freelance packaging outfit, and he's a very big man, J. Cheever Loophole. And I'd like you to meet Mr. Loophole. Well, Mr. Loophole is sitting in the office there, and he's wearing a great big Val McCann-type coat, which was the first one I'd ever seen. That's a coat. Oh, it's fantastic. Big collar and the thing. And it sweeps around. It's like a John Barrymore type coat, you know, with a big sash and all that. And he's sitting there and he has this natty Bavarian type hat with a feather sticking out of the top. And he has what we used to call when we were kids, he has a cookie duster. Well, now, cookie dusters were always objet de fun in my neighborhood. They were things you laughed at, in case you don't know Indiana French. There were things you boffed at. See, when a guy came along with a cookie duster, that meant he had a mustache. You mean you didn't know what a cookie duster was? What is it with you tonight, anyway? So he was sitting in there, and I'm looking at J. Cheever Loophole, and Cheever Loophole says, Shepherd, you look like an upstanding young man, and I've been listening to you on the radio for a long time. You sound very good. I like the kind of talent that you have. And I think that we can work a very interesting deal that will be advantageous to both of us. If you will call at my office in the Bell Block, I would like to talk to you about doing a special radio program that will entail special talent fees for a man of your special talent. Well, the manager of the sales department and he obviously were very close friends. And ever since I've been 2 years old, I've been scared of salesmen in one way or another. I was scared of our sales manager. And J. Cheever Loophole, obviously, was in good with this guy, so it made it all right. And I was being designated as a man of special talent. So a couple of weeks later, here's exactly what was entailed. He has this little radio studio. Now, this studio was remote. I'm telling you a radio show story. Now, most of you never hear the inside story of how some little radio stations work. I'm going to tell you one. This is a true story, unfortunately. This guy had, in his office, which was located in the shoddy section of this mythical city called Toledo, where they had third-rate dentists, places where they had little offices that said photos retouched, passport pictures developed and printed and delivered in 10 minutes, you know, those kind of places, loans, no questions asked, all that stuff. He's got a little office, and all it says on the door is J. Cheever Loophole. Radio Productions, Inc. Well, I'm in good with Mr. Loophole. And I am told that Mr. Loophole is a big man in radio. He has a tiny studio. It's a little bitty studio that's about the size of a broom closet attached to his office. Now, you won't believe this, but I'm going to have to tell it to you exactly the way it was. Inside this little studio, which had one little seat and a little chair in it, and next to the chair, it had a portable record player of the 3995 variety. A portable record player of the 3995 variety. You know the kind with the leatherette case with the stripes at the top? And it says imported. And you figure it's imported from a place that is even worse than Japan, you know, where they make everything out of balsa wood. And here's this little thing. And in front of the seat is, and so help me, I hope I get struck by lightning if this isn't the truth. Do you remember when they used to deliver cheese? You could buy cheese in 2-pound blocks, and it came in a long wooden box. Do you remember those cheese boxes? Yeah. Now you can't buy those. I never see those anymore, but they were 2-pound boxes of cheese. He had a cheese box. And in this cheese box, they had two faders built right into this thing. They looked like two used volume controls out of a couple of old Philcos. They had these faders, and he had a line amplifier that was made out of two 30s, little battery-operated tubes, and he had two batteries back there. And believe it or not, I'm telling you the truth, he had an amateur radio type D-Static 104 microphone, a crystal microphone that had roughly the, the fidelity characteristics of, of a Staten Island hand-crank telephone, that type of, wouldn't you say, Bob, roughly? It had no highs, no lows, and the middle was shaky, is really what it was. It was kind of, play the microphone, you know the kind you hear on police calls? When once in a while you're driving in a cab and you hear this cab radio go, well, that's the kind of microphone it was. So every day this guy has a radio program, and it originates from this studio. And every day on this little 2-bit tank radio station I was on, the announcer at the radio station would say, and now we take you to our special remote studios for the Radio Incorporated production. And the guy who was in this little studio would hear it on the earphones, Bob. He would hear this, and then immediately he would throw the switch, and on would come the portable 3995 hand-operated, hand-cranked, cheapy radio phonograph. He would turn that thing on, and he would play the theme. And it would go... He would feed it into this line. You've heard of Class E lines, Bob? Well, this line was the kind of line they use as kind of binding post wire for the Class E lines. It had, you could not believe, you know that kind of line? It's the special, what they call a special tie line. It has nothing to do with radio broadcasting. They rent these lines for about $4 a year, that kind of line. And you see, you people probably don't know that there are different classes of telephone lines. Well, let me tell you, the different classes of telephone lines, if you're going to bring in the Philharmonic and you're going to originate it at the Carnegie Hall, you buy the best kind of line. This costs like an arm and a leg. This is a high-fidelity line. If you're going to broadcast the Radio Productions, Inc., you buy the other line, which is way at the other end of the scale, and that's the line they use for pure Morse code reproduction, for racetrack results. That kind of line, you know. Oh, it's terrible. So every day at 2 o'clock, this guy has this program that comes on for 2 hours. He plays records. And in between, he does commercials, like mad. But commercials of the kind you have never heard in your born days. These are the kind of commercials that no self-respecting radio station about to go under for the last time would even consider putting on, believe it or not. They are unbelievable, indescribable. I couldn't even tell you what they are. I'd embarrass you now. I just couldn't tell you. That kind of commercials. Yes. Well, so he says to me, he says, Shepard, because of your special talent, I'm going to give you a chance to do this radio program. And the dew is dripping off my earlobes. My eyes are bright and blue and china-colored. And I am standing there like a human morning glory. He said, Shepard, every day you come down here at 1 o'clock, 1 hour before airtime, and I want you to lay out the records. I have a special series of records I want you to play. And I will give you the commercial copy. From there on in, it's yours, boy. You can go to the top here. You can go all the way to the top. You never know who's listening. Bob Hope started at a smaller station than this in Cleveland, Ohio. A small honky-tonk station. He was doing a program every morning from a funeral parlor. You can get a grip on this business and learn. J. Cheever Lupo will learn you. Well, you know, I'm standing there just, I'm fresh out of my college ethics class, and I'm an ex-corporal, and the dew is dripping. Oh, it's just wild, you know, and I'm telling you what happened. This is what happened. So I'm going back to the station, and I'm telling our boss, I says, you know, I've got a special talent program now. They're going to pay me for this one. See, the other program, it was actually the other way around on some of those radio stations. You pay them, and you can get time payments. True, I was working down at the library and a few other places to pay for my radio that I was working in. But this guy was going to pay me. He was going to pay me $7.50 a week for 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, which was real big money for that station. And it was because I had special talent. Well, little did I realize what it was really for. Till later on, excuse me. See, already it's bothering my soul. It tickles way down there. So every day I would come in, and this is the way it started out. The guy had mysteriously disappeared. Now, all I knew about this radio program up to this point was this. Since I had worked on the staff, at 2 o'clock on various occasions when I was on duty, there would be, on the log, it would say, Radio Productions, Inc., remote. And I'd be working the board, see, and I'd say, the time is now 2 p.m. In just 10 seconds, the special broadcast from our remote studios, a production of Radio Productions Incorporated. In just one moment. The time now, in 5 seconds, will be 2 p.m., courtesy of Whoopi Drive-In. Yes, when you've had a Whoopi Burger, you've lived. And now stay tuned for Radio Productions Incorporated. I'd sit there with the board. I never knew anything where this came from. You see, all years on, I'd sit there, and then I would turn up the gain on pot three, and I would throw our master line over to pot three, and I would wait to see what's coming in. And then on would come their theme through this Class X line. And then I'd hear the voice of this announcer who would come on and he would say, it's time now for swing time. Yes, a special Radio Productions Incorporated production. And this is Smiley Watson. Well, every day I would sit there, and he would do these fantastic commercials. Well, I had a special order from the chief not to log these commercials. I didn't know, you know. I had little do flopping off of me and all that. All it said was, when this guy came in, to write down on the log that X program came in, and it was remote, and that the remote copy was carried and would be affixed to the special affixion to the log. Period. I didn't know. I'd log it up, and I'd sit there, and I've got the cans on, and I listen to this terrible program. And you could hardly hear it because it was coming through this Class X line. It sounded like it was being done underwater by a guy who had a tin nose. So it was very peculiar, and it would come on. Well, one day, I find myself now on the other end of that remote line, J. Cheever Lupo. And he says, Mr. Shepard, I've listened to your work, and I think it's very good. I don't think you'll have any trouble picking up our special techniques. Now, he led me into this little cubbyhole. And it was a terrible little... I'll tell you what it smelled like. It smelled like an old, overstuffed easy chair. That whole studio did. It was a very interesting smell. It was smelled musty and stuffy with little stickly things. And he says, now, here you see we have a special voice microphone. Now, you're used to using a different kind of microphone. When you use this microphone, talk across this mic. I told you'd learn a lot of radio techniques from me. Talk across this mic. Of course, what he was really saying was, this mic is so cheap, if you get near it, it goes... So he was saying, now you talk across that microphone. Now, because we have a considerable latitude and leeway with the various special type automatic record playing equipment we use here, keep the turntable moving all the time. Do not turn the turntable off when you are on the air. Just hold the record in your hand and hold it... tightly like so. And then when you have the record queued up, do not actually cue up a record on this table. Set it in on the third or fourth groove and let her go. Just whopping. So, otherwise, if you turn this turntable off, you will get what we call in the radio business a wow. The wow goes wow, wow, wow. All right, now, what he, of course, meant was that if you turn this crummy thing off, it's liable not to start. And it takes 10 minutes for it to warm up, and it takes 15 minutes for the 47% wow to drop down to 29%. This is a whole complicated bit. It's now, when you do the commercials, I want you to stick to the copy word for word. I do not want you to keep a special log. I will take care of any kind of bookkeeping. Now, do you have any questions? Well, no. It's very interesting. You mean I can say anything I want to say in between the times? Yes, you are a man of exceptional talent. However, I will point out that you must do these commercials in the order I give them to you. He gave me a package of commercial that weighed 7.5 pounds. And I see there weren't going to be many words. It was going to be enough just getting all these words in, you see, because they were word for word. And he gave me 17 old Bing Crosby records without jackets. Now, the way we do this program, we play one side of the record one day. We play them all the way down. Remember what side you played? The next day, flip them over, and you play them all the way down. We have 17 records. We play 17 records a day. We play 17 numbers on this show. And if it doesn't come out right, that is because you are making a mistake. We have done this show now for over a year and a half, and it works out. Are you all set now? Do you have any questions? We begin with Red Sails in the Sunset, a fine old favorite. Okay. Well, the first day, I'm sitting there with the cans, and I'm waiting in there, and I hear the guy down at the other end of the studio. I hear him coming through. He says, "And now we bring you our special remote broadcast from the radio production studio. Our special remote studio is ready. The time now is 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Swing Time." I'm sitting there. I got the turntable. The turntable is squeaking away. I turn the pot up. I let the thing go. And I'm going, you see. Well, for the next 2 hours, I am reading commercials until my socks are wet with sweat. I am going, and I've got this cheese box, and the cheese box keeps falling off in my lap. Can you imagine? Your control board keeps falling in your lap with the 30 tubes, and it had this little bell wire attached to the batteries. You know. So I'm working this thing. Well, it's going great. It goes great for exactly 10 days. J. Cheever Loophole does not pay me the first week. He says to me, "I'll tell you, you look like a young fellow who blows his money in. One of the things you got to learn in this business is hang on to your dough. I can tell you about many an ex-radio star today who is starving. And I'm going to put your money aside for you, son. I'm going to teach you thrift." Well, the dough is still flapping around. So 10 days go by, I'm getting no dough for this. I am still on the tick over at the White Castle. I am $14 behind at the cleaners, and I'm working everything right down to the bone. And on the 10th day, as the sun arched across the horizon, I'm in there doing the show, but I notice J. Cheever Loophole is not in the office. I'm going, all of a sudden, in the middle of the show, the door opens up, and in came two large uniformed men. They knock on the glass, and they say, "Where's J. Cheever Loophole?" "I don't know." They hold up this big piece of paper. It says, "We got a warrant for your arrest. Get off the air." I said, "What?" "And now here is Bing Crosby, who's about to... We return you to our main studios. We return you now to our main studio. Hey, studio, we return you to our main studios. They're pinching me. We return you to..." And the guy down at the studio suddenly picked it up and he played the national anthem. 5 minutes later, I am down at the clink. J. Cheever Loophole has decamped. He has taken every known little schlock advertiser in the entire area for everything he's got. $7.50. Shepard is explaining before the judge. It was then that I learned that things ain't what they seem to be.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.
This is New York State Tax Commissioner Joseph Murphy. Deadline for filing 1962 New York State income tax returns is April 15th. File your return at the district tax office serving the county in which you live. You'll find the addresses of all state district tax offices on page 12 of the long form instruction booklet and on page 1 of the short form.